dokie, folks. It is looking like we are live right now. Like it's all checking out. Steven Ignoramus here in the house. Welcome. This is going to be uploaded as a podcast in a couple days, I believe, but I'm here live right now with Jessica Green. She is a blogger, a YouTuber, an anarcho-capitalist, and the host of the Jessica Green Show. Before the program, I asked her if she was a prepper, and I made sure that I would put the big quotation marks up. So let's talk about that first. Like, are you a prepper, and why do you need the quotation marks?
I mean, everybody kind of knows that there is a stigma to prepper, because you have that like whole doomsday prepper thing. And I don't know if you saw that show. They have a season of it on Netflix, but there are some people who kind of like take it to the point of an obsession. And so when you start talking to people about these things, they instantly go to that place with it. And they say, oh, you're like that guy I saw on TV. And I'm like, no.
Yeah.
That like, guy, not really. Whatever that guy found, he would have been really intense about. And he just happened to find prepping.
That's a good point. Like, kind of like an addictive personality or just like, yeah. I mean, you know, it's interesting. I mean, one of the things we're going to talk about today is just kind of how polarized people are. But it's interesting how... You're right, the prepper has a connotation, but for people like me and like my people, it's the best thing in the world. Like if someone says they're a prepper, I can just like relax and talk about why everything's probably gonna end eventually. You know, like, yeah. So what do you can? Do you grow stuff? Like what do you do?
So yeah, it's been it's been kind of a slow burn with that. I started out by just like storing an extra can here, an extra can there. And it all started with a snowstorm that happened in Atlanta. And we had a snowstorm, I think it was 2014, and it shut the whole city down. And I lived in the middle of a downtown area of a major U.S. city. And a snowstorm shut everything down for 5 days. The thing is, Atlanta, it's a southern city. We only had 4 snowplows for the whole 4 million population. Yeah. So we couldn't get our cars out of our driveway. And we were out of power for 5 days, and I was a waitress, so I ate at work, and I didn't have anything in my house. And about day 3 was when every last bit of food that we had was gone. And
wow, from your
yeah.
Wow.
That'll change your mind about some things. Like, you think you live in the hub and mecca of the cultural world, and then all of a sudden you're in a third world country,
wow.
You know,
so like would you say at the time, do you think you were more prepared than the average Atlanta person or less?
At the time, I wasn't prepared at all.
Okay.
But
to me, like, even if you're a smart person that's not prepared at all, you're probably still more prepped than a dumb person that doesn't prepare at all. Like, but if you had nothing, then if you have nothing, you have nothing. Like, that's what nothing is. Yeah.
We got lucky that because we were early 20 somethings, we had enough cardboard beer boxes to burn in the fireplace.
Wow.
So we could stay warm, but all of me and all of my roommates slept in the main area of the house burning those boxes.
Whoa.
To keep warm.
That's some serious stuff right there.
Yeah, it got real super fast. And so I was like, huh, I don't ever want to be in this position again.
It can go down.
And
so quick.
After that, I was like, okay, we'll just buy an extra can of this here, an extra can of that there. Maybe learn how to cook. You know, my parents didn't really like impart me with a whole lot of home skills.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I worked in restaurants for pretty much all of my working career. So I was just used to eating at work. And it turned my life around. So
great.
Now I consider myself an accomplished cook. I do canning. I grow. we've moved out of the center of the major city and way far out into the country. Just shifted our priorities a great deal. And then to see everything in the news happening the way that it is, it's kind of a bittersweet vindication that it was maybe a good idea to do some of this. Because when the quarantine stuff hit, I know people who like have serious illnesses and take care of people who like have, you know, serious needs, and they weren't able to get what they needed. And I was like, look, I'm not trying to like beat a dead horse here, but this is why I've been telling you to store shit up for 5 years. And,
yeah, it's like, what do you do when you're that right? I mean, because it's kind of like, I mean, you know, the coronavirus is obviously no like World War II or whatever. But what if you were right about World War II? It's like you can be wrong and less people die, or like be right and it's like a terrible sense. Yeah. You don't want to like poke a finger in their face, but like, I don't know.
I've tried to be really careful about that. Mm. I don't want to do when I told you so. That's not helpful.
Mm.
It's like, hey, we had a mini version of what happens. And historically, not to skip around here, but historically, shit happens. So it's not like I'm coming up with crazy scenarios that I think might happen that never do. Storms happen. Governments collapse.
Yeah.
Those are common events in human lifetimes. And to simply just think that like the supply chains that exist around us will always exist and function the way that they do is hubris. Yeah. That will get you killed.
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, to me, that's, you know, I don't know. Like, I think I'm going to cut up my libertarian card, my LP card, pretty soon. I'm pretty sure I'm not a libertarian anymore, but I still value liberty a lot. But what I've always said about libertarians is the reason I became one a couple of years ago is because these are the people that think about stuff. And I don't know if it's realistically or whatever. Some people say libertarianism is utopian. I think other ideals are more utopian. But to me, when I got, you know, we were talking off mic or off air about Tom Woods and how him making arguments and like persuading people or whatever. Like, to me, I just found libertarianism so persuasive because it's such an easy argument, this part of it. Stuff runs out.
Yeah.
Period. And it's like it will not continue forever. Now, when is it going to stop continuing? I don't know. But the state of the U.S. government and, like you said, the supply chain is, it won't run out forever, and we're certainly past the halfway point. Certainly. Well, you know, so it's like, it's a smart way of thinking, but some people don't think that's real. But have you had that experience, like trying to persuade people, or they just deaf ears or whatever?
Yeah. I definitely do. It's not easy. Even now, people are kind of like, oh, things are going back to normal. And I was like, oh, well, you know, sometimes there's like a little earthquake before there's a big earthquake. So that's my thinking personally.
Do you mean with COVID? You mean the COVID or the more longer form arc stuff?
We have a much like larger issue at play here, or set of issues at play here, I think, than any virus. And it's, you know, the government response to COVID, the population's response to the election, what the election results will be and how people will respond to that. And then we have had a government that's been printing money like it's, you know, going out of style. And funny enough, that's exactly the effect that it will have. And the inflation that's around the corner cannot be, I've heard a lot of people say 18 or 24 months down the road. There's no way to put a number on it, but it seems impossibly stupid not to maybe just prepare for things that could possibly get ugly, because there are a lot of things at play here that are uncertain.
Yeah, I mean, that just even that list that you just kind of rattled off, we could spend like a full hour on each one of those. And it's like, you know, and then when I was reviewing your material, like all your different websites and stuff, like there's so much that I want to talk to you about. Like, prepping is a big part of it. But like, you know, what was crazy, I listened to your, I think, third podcast where you gave your walkaway story. And the timeline of your walk away from the progressive left or whatever is almost the exact same as mine. It was right around the election. I think that red pilled a lot of people. But like, you have, a 40-minute video up on your channel explaining that. But why don't you just give us the quick, you know, 3 to 5 minute deal of how you came to where you are and what you were politically 3 or 4 years ago, that whole deal.
Sure. In 2016, I was a hardcore Bernie bro. And I think because... I, like a lot of other people who are, you know, consider themselves socialists, the young American socialists, recognize that there is a serious problem with our state and with our government. They don't maybe necessarily correctly identify the causes, but they correctly identify that there is a problem. And in that respect, I do consider them my allies. Now, when Donald Trump won the election and things just started to take this kind of turn, where violence was acceptable now. Like all of a sudden, the what I considered liberal values, which were free speech and, you know, dissent with, you know, you have the right to peacefully dissent, and the ACLU used to defend the KKK, like classic liberal values. Mm-hmm. Suddenly these things were being thrown out the window in favor of rhetoric such as punch a Nazi. And while a lot of people who are libertarians had a Ron Paul moment, that famous moment where he basically roasts Giuliani at that debate, which is awesome.
Yeah.
I didn't have that moment. I had a Rand Paul moment, which is Rand Paul and his neighbor got in a big old fight in the yard, and his neighbor put him in the hospital. And he did that for political reasons. It was a violent, politically based attack. Mm. And I thought, okay, as liberals, we're going to condemn this. We're going to say this was, you know, dirty pool. This isn't the way that we want to accomplish our goals. And my group of friends rolled on me faster than I was able. Like, it happened. It was 0 to 90.
Yeah.
It was crazy the way people rolled on me. And basically, I was receiving messages like, "You're a white supremacist," and like,
confirmed.
I was a social justice warrior. It was shocking to me to be called these things, and it made me politically homeless. Basically, I was like, well, "Screw these guys! If they're going to be beating people over the head, I don't want anything to do with them." And so it created fertile ground for me to listen to people I wouldn't ordinarily have given myself permission to listen to. And one of those people, as you mentioned, was Tom Woods. And Tom Woods has this really gentle quality of the way he imparts information, where he speaks to even the people who disagree with him as though they are human beings. And that turned my head. Because that wasn't the environment that I had come from. And I certainly wasn't going to become like a right winger or Republican, because those people are no different, to be honest. And so I was hearing Tom talk and I was like, hey, dude, you're making a lot of sense to me. You're using the same values that I have valued. You're talking about free speech. You're talking about, the things that make me feel like I'm a liberal. And so I realized, oh, you know what? Liberal actually has, there's like a meaning of classical liberal. And that might actually fit more where you, so I don't feel like I changed my values.
Yeah.
I feel like I remained the same person all the way along.
Yeah.
It's just the political party that I used to associate with my values, it's not comfortable to do that any longer.
Yeah.
And so Democrats got up and ran away from me.
Yeah.
And I discovered a more accurate philosophy to describe my values, okay, which is libertarianism.
They have to turn away from people like you and me. Like it's very, I don't know. I mean, when I say leftism, I mean, I've said this to older people, what I'm about to say, and they'll try to fight me because they think that I'm talking about Democrat or a classical, like forgive me, but Joe Biden 80s Democrat rather than modern leftism. And I'm like, yeah. No, I'm talking about your modern leftist person cannot communicate like that. Like they're so entrenched in what's evil that they can't, like, I heard you talk about it on your show that, like, if you mention a person gave a speech for the League of the South, they're out. Mm-hmm. Like, it doesn't matter what their other arguments are. It doesn't matter what they did. It doesn't matter, like, how many kids they have or whether they're a Christian, like Tom was. Like, it doesn't matter. They spoke in front of a Confederate flag, period. And even the most brave of them will lose all their friends for not taking that stance. So it's just an incredible amount of social pressure. And I get it. I've heard a lot of people say the phrase, I've said the phrase that you just said, where everyone changed, I stayed the same, everyone else changed around me. And that was true for me for about 2 or 3 years. And then I started to change in like early 2019, hard right. Not top right quadrant, but just like the, you know, pro-life, completely pro-gun. Like all gun laws are unconstitutional, like stuff like that. And
yeah,
it's very normal to hear. And I heard you mention that, like, on your show, that it was part of like a Facebook group. Can you talk about like what happened in that Facebook group and, you know, what that whole deal was?
I get nervous when I talk about them because they had a lot of like internet attacks on me for a long time. And anytime I would mention them, even in passing, like, how are these people listening to all of these obscure libertarian podcasts that every time I bring this up, they do it? But it's kind of abated now, so I think it's okay to bring up. But I was part of an atheism group on Facebook.
And you're a Christian now, right?
Do what?
You're a Christian now, right?
I am now, yeah.
Okay, keep going. Yeah, I just want to know,
Yeah, and a lot of people think... Because I also became pro-life, and people associate those things together, but I became pro-life before I became Christian. So I don't associate my reasons for becoming pro-life with Christianity, but that's this whole other the thing about philosophy is you have to have the freedom to run around with them and have wrong philosophies and be able to change your philosophies. And we don't create that kind of freedom for people any longer. So young people, they get locked into a uncompromising ideology, and they were school children previous to this. So they never had to compromise anything before, and they feel right. And they never have the freedom to like leave their ideology because their group will descend on them. And I don't know if you guys have been seeing the videos that have been coming out of these protests or riots lately, but it's like they're demanding that people give outward symbolism of their movement.
It's
and when they don't, they're screaming in your face, they're screaming in your ear, like on the verge of violence, because you're not gonna, you know, give the sign of the revolution. Like, I know that I'm a history student, so I know these things, but surely other people recognize these precursors.
Yeah.
To
yeah. It's like, yeah, like you do the fist and one day the palm is gonna, you know, like one day all you have to do is open the hand and
but we had this whole society, and I know people hate that word, but, you know, until you find me a better word, that's the one I'm going to use. This whole society and culture over here in the States based on the idea that you don't have to do that.
Yeah.
That nobody can come along and demand you behave this way. The ACLU used to defend the freedom of speech of the KKK.
Yeah.
That was the America that I understood and I believed in.
It's way better.
You know?
Yeah.
When I talk about loving my country, that's what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
Because that's a precious, I never realized how precious. And,
yeah,
and how
it's very
easy
unique.
To use
it's
that
like very it unique too. There's not many examples in society of like standing up for principle over tribalism.
Yeah.
There's just not really many examples. So, you know, okay. So here's one. So you're talking about, did you see this video from, I assume you're talking about from DC, or there's a couple where they're eating at lunch and they go up and they demand. Okay. I heard you mention a couple times in your video that you thought you were in a cult. Like you compared the Facebook group to a cult. Or whatever.
Yeah,
and now
yeah.
I do agree until you start involving things like intimidation and physical violence, then it becomes straight up terrorism. So what do you view this more, this line, before I even ask that, did you identify as an SJW? Did you call yourself an SJW?
Like, oh, yes.
Wow.
Proudly. Because people were using it as a, like, to cut people down. Oh, you're a social justice warrior. And I'm like,
you're
yes,
right.
I am.
Yeah.
I'm proud of the Fed. I'm like, what are you yelling at people on the internet? It's not fighting for social justice.
I mean, so I guess, did it start? I mean, because it did start as a pejorative. Like, people would be like, oh, yeah, and then they would just own it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Interesting. Yeah. So you own that label. That is amazing. I haven't met many people that own that. Like, that's, I mean, to be honest, though, I kind of own the label of racist the same way right now. Like,
it's like if that's what you're going to call me and you're going to misconstrue what I am, then fine.
They're straight up telling the truth. They think I'm a racist. Fine.
Well, I think it's a little more complicated than that. I think that people use racist because they know that you're not. There's nothing more dangerous in this society and hated and vilified than being a racist.
Yeah.
And so when they say that, they're hoping you'll go, oh my God, no, I'm not. And that you'll bend over backwards and
appease shit.
And do whatever you need to so that they won't use that label on you. They know you're not a racist. That's why they're using it.
I don't know. I think I would agree or disagree depending on the person you're talking about. I do know some people that actually think I'm racist. And I know a lot of people that are like the screaming type that, like, I don't even know what they think. I mean, I think these people are emotionally and morally and spiritually crippled. So I don't know if they know if they think what they thought, what they think, I'm sure if you were to go crack open that skull and see what it was, I don't know. I'm kind of like that. Like, I used to be a leftist. So my brain is like, I don't know. I just, I've seeded that ground. If you want to, I just don't care about the label that much anymore because there's no definition. Like, no one has a definition for that word. So just call it and go about your day, you know?
That's what you have to do. It doesn't stop until we stop it, and that means the individual people. So I don't know, there were two videos of Black Lives Matter protesters asking people to raise their fists, and there were people sitting there who refused to do it. It doesn't stop until there are people like that. Unfortunately, we're starting to see people like that, so that means that those people are going to start to get hurt.
Mm-hmm.
It's not until people see people like that getting hurt, I think, that they're going to, you know, I don't know. I don't think there's any way that Donald Trump can't win, because I think people look at images like that and it terrifies them. And they're not going to say it out loud, but they're going to vote for Trump because stuff like that is scary.
Yeah, I think that the, I don't know. I've always thought that, like, the silent majority thing was a bit of a cliche, but I really think there is one this go around.
Well, I mean, It is a cliche, but cliches exist because they're true.
Same. So, yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Interesting point. Yeah. So you think that Trump's going to win? Do you think there's going to be like mail fraud fuckery or like, you know,
oh, sure.
Yeah. But you think at the end of the
day, there has to be, like, I mean, that stuff's been going on the whole time. The government is so corrupt and functions so poorly that the Democrats themselves are on video many times talking about the way that mail-in voting would be abused. They have a video going around of a mail truck guy who was stealing Trump signs out of people's yards, and they found his mail truck was full of them. So the idea that this person is impartially going to collect ballots is like silly.
Wow. We'll see. I mean, it's just gonna be like, I don't know, it's a little scary. I mean, when you're a Christian, it's kind of okay because God's will be done, and to be a Christian live streamer, it's a good time to be alive, because I'm just going to cover this clown world shit from my room, and I'll go out on the street and cover protests too, but it's just like, what will happen. Even if Biden wins, there's an argument there's like the collapsitarian argument a little bit at that point. Do you think that's true? Do you think like the collapse of the dollar will come quicker under Biden, or what do you think about that?
So I think that it definitely will be hard to say something like that, because the level at which Trump has increased spending is like astronomical.
Yeah, it's insane.
Yeah. So like, he may have social values that people agree with, or he might give the press, you know, trouble, which is very amusing to me as well.
Mm-hmm.
But his function has only been to rattle the establishment so much that their mask falls off.
Mm-hmm.
And we've gotten a peek behind the curtain. A lot of the genies that have come out of the bottle aren't going back into the bottle. But the concept of Trump as some kind of like guiding force or leader, I think, is like wishful thinking.
Yeah, to me, it's all just a sorting mechanism. I mean, I started my show on January 3rd of last year. And at that point, I was a full-on ANCAP, you know. So, and to me, I still don't like government. You know, but I do, I guess my pragmatism, or I guess self-described pragmatism, set in. So it's like, you know, so when I say more or less, I don't mean good or bad. I just think even if it's an inch, even if it's a year quicker, that's still quicker. And so to me, when I think about the spending thing, I mean, I don't know if Trump, I mean, I do think Hillary would have spent more, you know, I do think Hillary would have gotten us into more wars.
I think that's true. I'm not sure the spending.
It's hard to know. It's hard to measure that in your own brain, like, because you're trying to play God a little bit with your time machine and be like, oh, Hillary, what? Yeah. So it's kind of dumb. It's just kind of my gut, but I definitely, the social stuff, I'm on board.
The reason to vote for Trump wouldn't be because he would be better for the economy or any of those reasons. I think it would be the fact that the Democrats have displayed a complete will to enact the wars across the Middle East and to get ourselves into conflicts.
Very strange.
We're now on the verge of conflicts with places like Russia and China, and the world is due for a rearrangement.
Why did that happen? If they wouldn't have gone pro-war, I might still be on the left. But I've been anti-war since we invaded Iraq. I was 12 years old, and I was like, what is this shit? Like it was one of my first things that I was like sure about. I'm like, this is a lie. Osama bin Laden's not Iraqi. Like, what is this bullshit? And then once there were like war hawks on the left, once Hillary Clinton became like a war hawk or whatever, I was just full. I just knew at that point I was not a Democrat. But why do you think that happened? Like, is it like a neoliberal, almost neocon thing? Like, why did they go away from being anti-intervention?
I mean, they're political parties, right? So it's, what can we get our base riled up about? And I always like to point out, much to people's discomfort, that when Trump was elected and they had a Republican House and Senate, Rand Paul put up legislation to defund Planned Parenthood. And half of the Republicans and all of the Democrats went, nope, because they need that rallying flag. When they really had an opportunity to strike a blow at the amount of abortion that occurs in this country, they wouldn't do it, because that's the thing that they go back to their state and say, oh, you guys, you better vote for me, because those Democrats, they want the abortion. Well, you know, you've kind of lost that card now, haven't you? And also, like, the moral don't cheat on your wife, or the party of morality, you elected Donald Trump. You don't have that anymore. So sort of like all the masks have been ripped away, not just from the Democrats, from the Republicans, too. Like, yeah, the establishment has had the mask ripped off.
Yeah.
And
they put them on, you know, us. A lot of people are they put the mask on their populace instead.
Yeah. A lot of people are desperately like, if I vote for Joe Biden, I'll be able to put the mask back on. It's like, no,
it's done.
We've all seen it.
It's done. Yeah.
And like, I think that that's a well-meaning intention. God bless you, but it's stupid.
Yeah, I mean, I'm anti-genie, yo. I'm anti-genie, I'm anti-bottle, I'm anti-band-aid. It's just the truth is good enough. Like, so whatever happens will happen. But like, one thing I wanted to ask you about, when I listened to your show, you said you were going to do like a two-part thing where you did your walk-away story and then you were going to do how you became a Christian. Did you ever do that video? I looked for it.
So I ended up going on a podcast. Ooh, excuse me. I ended up going on a podcast called The Bad Roman.
Okay.
And I did an episode there, and it was emotionally taxing to tell that story. I didn't realize how emotionally taxing it was going to be. I think my episode is number 7 or number 8.
Mm-hmm.
And I was both afraid, because that's sort of my Christian online community, that guy Craig. He's involved with a lot of people that are kind of like my online church type people.
Yeah.
And I was afraid when my story came out that a lot of them would be like, get this sinner away from me.
Wow.
And the overwhelming amount of love and encouragement and people who told me that my story affected them. And just like, I was so overwhelmed by like the love of my Christian family.
Amazing.
That I was like reaffirmed that I was like, I've definitely made the right choice here. Like, so, you know, if you guys are interested in how an atheist becomes a Christian, you might be interested in that episode of The Bad Roman. I think it's titled with my name, which is Jessica Green.
Okay. I'll look it up and I'll put it on our Discord server and stuff like that. That's
cool.
Great.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah. So I ended up, not recording one for my own podcast just because of the amount of mental discomfort that I went through telling that story, but it's there if anybody wants it.
Cool. Are you like a certain denomination or anything, or like just
Ooh.
Cool?
Yeah, no, I'm into Jesus.
Yeah.
I started. So I'm reading the Bible currently, and I started with the New Testament, and I've been going through like the Book of Matthew, Luke, you know, so on and so forth. So my major knowledge in Christianity comes directly from like the Jesus movement.
Yeah, great.
And so the denomination stuff, I've talked to some really intelligent people, and I've watched some really intelligent people debate about it, but it's above my pay grade. And I don't think Christianity is meant for theological scholars alone.
Of course.
I think that the most illiterate goat herder in the middle of nowhere can understand the tenets of Christianity and what the highest law is, which is to love one another.
Yeah.
So as long as you've got that peace, you've got enough to get the rest.
Great. Wow, that's cool. I mean, yeah, that's just so. I mean, I became a Christian basically March of last year, and I was raised Christian, and then, like most people in this modern culture, fell off for like 15 years, you know. And so, and you know, one of the reasons things leading up to actually believing is just seeing people's fruit, kind of like you just said, where it's like, you know, you expect to be like cast out as a sinner or whatever, but it's really a religion based in love. I mean, like, I happen to believe it, but also even if you don't believe it, it is a religion based in love, like objectively, like look at what the gospel says, you know?
And it's humanitarian, and it's changed the world, and everything good in the world that we know now is because of Christ. Like it's undeniable to me as a student of history, as a scientist, all of it.
So, okay, let's get back to politics. So you're an ANCAP.
In the libertarian vein.
Yeah, in the libertarian vein. I would still barely say I am. Like, it's so hard for me not to move up into the right, upper right corner because of the level of property crime. And to me, it's like you can abolish the government, and given that that's not going to happen, what do you do? And I'm kind of like anti-Republican. I'm further right than Republican. I mean, I also am like kind of anti-party. So I don't feel the need to like join anything like that. But okay. So No one can be a pragmatic anarcho-capitalist right now. It's not going to happen with the level of population that you have against you. Like I don't mean your ideology can be, but the ends that you want are not going to happen. I don't think in this decade. Like I don't think in this decade. Do you think that like abolishing the state is doable?
Okay. So abolishing the state, or the idea of getting rid of the state all in one foul swoop, is not something that is going to be accomplished by liberty-minded individuals.
Mm.
When those things happen in the cycles of history, which I think I have a theory of my own that it's cyclical. Like civilization builds itself up until those at the top are so corrupt that the little people gather around, they burn the castle down. And then, you know, it's another cycle starts over, yes, and it builds up again. So we're at the end of our cycle. you know, but when that happens, when things fall down, it's not the concerned philosophies of liberty and property rights and things of that nature that the power vacuum does not become possessed by them. Mm. It becomes, you know, it's going to be one kind of authoritarian, yep, versus another kind
the
of
next gun. It'll be the next gun.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, so like, I don't know. Everybody feels the ground rumbling. We all have this human instinctual sense that whatever this has been, we're at the end of that era now. And not a one of us knows what the other side is going to look like. But if we go by our historical precedents, things are going to get bad before they get better.
Yeah.
So, you know, I don't like to be a doomsayer. I'm actually like a totally positive person.
Yeah.
But when that happens, there is an opportunity to reorder events and reorder things in such a way that you can increase the amount of human freedom.
Mm.
And that happened with the American Revolution. And I think that the philosophies and principles of Christianity being so popular in the world had a lot to do with that. So I think one of the important things to do is sort of maintain those tenets and hold on to creating an environment for that stuff to survive whatever's to come.
Okay. Do you
think, know, and we do that through our acts, you know, the way that we behave, the way that we will take care of one another, the way that your neighbors are going to rely on you when the time comes.
Right.
And be ready to be a Christian, because it's going to be important for those things to survive.
Do you think government is immoral?
Yeah, I mean, principally, it's immoral to assume will that was never given to you consensually.
Mm-hmm.
First of all, you know, as a woman, the concept of consent is kind of something that I am like laser focused on. And the government takes a tacit consent. It assumes consent based on being born in a set of geographic borders.
Hmm.
You know what I'm saying? So like by its very nature, it's doing things in your name that you would never allow.
Right.
You would never bomb Syria. If somebody came to your door and was like, hey, do you want to chip in, you know, $4,000 or whatever amount of your income it was that went to the military industrial complex last year through taxes, you want to chip that into bombing Syria? And you'd be like, no, I've got kids to feed.
Right.
You would never do that. And so the government like gives itself permission on your behalf to kill Syrians. Like, there's no morality in that.
That's definitely wrong. So to me, I don't have my mind made up on whether inherently government is immoral, because to me the smallest form of government is parenting. And like think about it, there's a person, there's a soul that did not choose to be in this world. They weren't a soul until they were a soul, and then they're brought into the world, and the kid does all kinds of things that all these things happen to the kid that the kid didn't really choose at the time, but it's benefits them in the long run.
I see what you're
so I'm just trying to think like a philosopher, not think like a statist, because
yeah,
I agree
and
with you.
You're right to make that distinction. I think Bob Murphy actually brings this up in one of the episodes of his podcast, where he talks about the difference between government and the state.
Mm.
And in a parental child type situation, you do have the action of being governed, you know, like, what is a governor? You know, like you think of a governor on a piece of machinery, like what does it do?
Oh.
It's not entirely different than what parents are supposed to do. So yes, government exists in small settings without the state. And so what I'm talking about is the state, which takes agency for itself that was not given consensually.
I see.
With a parent-child situation, like, okay, so like many libertarians have written on this that and have made commentary that would way outstrip my own, but like you can't create this being and then not care for its needs until such a time that it can do that for itself. So you have an obligation to prevent it from hurting itself and to make sure that it eats. And sometimes that will go against the agency and will of the child at the time. Mm. Kids don't want to eat their vegetables, but you kind of got to make them, you know, like that's the deal. Mm-hmm. But you, once you have come to a point where you have agency on your own, then they shouldn't be allowed to govern you any further.
Mm.
You know, so there's like a sort of a contract in the creation of the child. Dave Smith had put it in such a good way. He said, you can't take somebody up into an hot air balloon and then be like, okay, I'm done taking care of you.
I
rescind
that.
Permission and then shove you off.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Like that would be kind of the deal with parents and children. So there's government there for sure.
Yeah. So, but what
must govern them so they don't die.
Do you think the American Revolution was moral?
It was what?
Moral. Was it right?
That's a complicated question,
yeah,
especially given the fact that I've recently come to understand that France largely funded the American Revolution. And in their funding of the American Revolution, their government went broke and ceded what would happen in the French Revolution.
That is hilarious.
Yeah,
so they
that's
pay for
to
us
think
and
about,
they...
isn't it?
French.
So the French Revolution was an abhorrent display of, I don't know what you would want to call that, but whatever that demon is that gets inside of people that makes them believe that they can make their fellow men better, that was the seed of that really, you know, coming to like to view. And so it's hard to say, like our revolution cost 55,000 innocent French people their heads under the blade of the guillotine. So much like we look at World War II and we say, oh, this is so morally clean. We feel good. We beat Hitler. America, good guy. Germany, bad guy. And
so
nobody
dumb.
Talks about the bargain that we made with Stalin to sell all of the Eastern Bloc to them so that he would basically dump the bodies of his people on the German army. And, you know, we sold millions of people out to Stalin who would then die during the Holodomor. So, you know, there's no morale, there's no morals in these things.
Yeah.
It's muddy.
It's very messy and muddy. That's why I like asking this stuff. And it's like, I don't even know who I think it was Aristotle is like, I'm going to butcher this, but like the mark of intelligence is your ability to entertain an idea without accepting it. And this is one of the reasons that I went anti-left as well, because every time I would do one of these like silly thought experiments, I would just get... like re-triggered, like you know,
yeah.
I'd be like, okay, like you know, you with the leftists, all you got to do is bring up the idea that Stalin might be on Hitler's level, even though I think he was worse. I mean, he killed more people
and vastly worse.
So all you have to do is make that even comparison. Like all you have to do is say like if Hitler is 100%, Stalin is like 70, and you're losing friends left and right.
Yeah. I have friends who, and I'll never understand this, they post pictures of Lenin and they're like, hearts. And I'm like, what are you?
Yeah, there's these statues in Europe now where they're like unveiled. Isn't there one in Seattle?
So yeah, the great thing about the one in Seattle is that it's private property. So...
Oh, cringe, dude. Okay.
But they cool. actually, so because we have this issue with the Confederate statues, something that I thought was really interesting was to compare it to the de-Stalinization of the Russian Empire, basically, after Stalin died. And they did tear down all the statues and images of Stalin, but they put them all in a park. So there's this weird, like, duet?
One park? Like, or like many
One
parks?
One park. So there's this weird park in Russia that you can go to. And I don't remember the name offhand, but... it's all these weird, like, half-broken Lenin and Stalin statues kind of, like, set up in the dirt and, like, the grass
Amazing.
Has kind of grown around them. And kids play on them and climb on them and stuff. And I said, this is an interesting way to have dealt with that history. Because you can still go there and you can still see all of this statuary that had been made during the Stalinist era. But then you see like little kids kind of like stomping on his head and stuff, and he looks like half broken in the dirt, and you're like, yeah, this is right.
It's not the opposite of what I would do. It's interesting. It's not the complete opposite. Okay, here's another thing I was thinking about. You know, a lot of the people that hang in my chat are anarcho-capitalists or whatever, and we all got mad when they were calling these people over in these protesters anarchists. Now, they kind of are, I guess, but the anarchists I know, like, know
how... You gotta admit, they can throw a boog better than we can.
They can. Way better. Way better. But, like, I also think, you know, this is not what I was gonna say, but I also think that they're being allowed to do a lot of this. Like, a lot of this stuff, yeah. You know what I mean? So, it's, like, worst boog ever as far as I'm concerned. I mean, the right-wing boog, you know, we ain't gonna win this one by going into the city and throwing bricks at cops. But either way, like, I got mad, like, when they were, like... These are anarchists. I guess they are, but the anarchists I know how to like talk about philosophy, you know?
Yeah,
but,
okay, so yeah, I hear about this a lot, and I don't know if you had a question lined up, but
oh, just go ahead. It's fine.
I got it real quick.
It's fine. You're good.
When people are using that term, they're using it in the most pedestrian way.
Yes.
They don't mean Rothbardian, anarcho market capitalism, yeah. Like all that stuff. They don't mean any of that. They mean Molotov throwing people in black masks, and for their purposes, that's very accurate. So for me to come along and go, well, actually, anarchist means. I mean,
you're right.
Who are you trying to help?
You're so right.
And so somebody's like, these anarchists, and I'm like, yeah, you know, personally. So I like to just draw a distinction between myself and someone who would throw a Molotov by saying I'm a market anarchist.
I saw that, yeah.
Right, so and that's kind of my thing. But this is like one small piece of who I am as a human being, too. Mm. Our labels are not who we are. It's just a piece of philosophy that we kind of identify with at this time in our lives. Mm. And tomorrow that might be different. And yesterday for me, it certainly was different. But we have to give ourselves the freedom to run around in the philosophical realm. Try different things on for size. Read Kropotkin. Read The Conquest of Bread. What are you afraid of? Just read it. You think it's going to make you a communist? Like, give yourself the intellectual freedom to explore ideas that you're not supposed to have. Because that's how you grow.
Yeah.
You know, and guess what? Some of those communists, those like hardcore communists, they had some good ideas. Not all of them, not the way that they were implemented, but you will find things in their philosophy that you gel with.
Yeah, I mean, this is one of my like original points when I was like starting my show last year. It's like, you know, people would be like, Hitler was all evil. He was everything he did was evil. I'm like, dude, but you know, he thought spinach was good for you. So it's like, are you retarded saying that like Hitler's wrong about everything? He thought
Norm
water
MacDonald
was...
had a great bit about that. He was like, you know, Hitler had a dog, and that dog thought Hitler was awesome.
Very exactly. Exactly.
Hey guys, where's Hitler?
You know? Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah. And he's like, no, he's underground somewhere. he's not coming back. He's in Argentina somewhere.
Yeah.
So here's my question though. Okay. So to me, okay, the left, you know, we'll talk about anarcho-communism, anarcho-capitalism as a comparison. Okay. They want these statues to come down because of, like, racism, blah, blah, blah. Like, you know, whatever their reason is. I get their reason. I just, you know, that's...
Symbolism.
Whatever it is, yeah. Now, say that's a bad thing that happened. The right ANCAPs are anti-violence and they're anti-state. The hardcore ANCAPs should also be calling for these statues to come down. Because they're based on violence, and that violence is the state. Like, if you want to be really, really philosophically principled, you should be anti any glorification of the state if you're an ANCAP. Do you agree with that?
So, yeah, I find oftentimes I can't enjoy certain movies anymore. Movies that, like, kind of glorify cool. war
yeah.
or games that glorify war, that kind of stuff I find uncomfortable. You know, That's really tough because I know that there are a lot of people who also they have like familial ancestors that, you know, died in these battles. And this was a huge event in American history and people feel really attached to it and all that kind of stuff. So it's not just the glorification of the state. It's the way that people have wrapped up their personal being with the state.
Identity.
So when you start like attacking these things and pulling these symbols down, it feels like you're pulling down my grandfather.
Mm-hmm.
You're pulling down my traditions. You're pulling down, you know, the way I feel about who I am. And it gets all like, again, muddy and convoluted. And it's not apples to apples to say, well, this is a symbol of the state, so you should want it to come down too.
Okay.
It's like, I understand like both sides of that argument. So the one argument about like personal heritage, which I just made, I understand that argument. But I also understand the argument of a friend of mine who's a person of color who says, how am I supposed to go into a courthouse with a Confederate statue and feel like I'm going to get equal justice here?
Mm.
And I'm like, that's a fantastic point. I wouldn't feel as though I could get equal justice here. And to me, that makes an argument for privatizing courts, because she would have the opportunity to go to a court that didn't have a Confederate statue and might even advertise itself saying, hey, would you like to do business? Would you like to have your case are handled by people who don't, you know, harken back to the Confederacy?
Mm.
You have options.
Yeah.
Whereas with the state monopoly, you have to go with whatever judge is assigned to you in whatever building it's assigned to you.
In the place where you got in trouble. Yeah. It's,
yeah. So Bob point. Murphy, again, I love Bob Murphy, so I'm going to bring him up a lot. Yeah. But Bob Murphy has a video on YouTube. It's like 14 minutes long. It's called Law Without Government. And it has some really interesting ideas for how we might approach the legal system in a stateless society.
Yeah, I'm looking it up.
So
right
there
now.
Are practical ideas out there, and not that I am like wholesale, this is how we should do it and this would absolutely work. I'm just saying there are ideas out there.
Hmm.
So just because some people can't envision things without the state is not an excuse to not try different things that might work better.
Yeah, and that's interesting. I mean, because the thing is, you know, most sane people want law. Whether it doesn't have to, that doesn't mean the state, but like some sort of like thing where we're not just like throwing shit and bullets at each other and like killing everybody, you know, like so.
Standards.
Yeah, just standards. Standards. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, interesting.
You can't come into my house and just throw my things around. Like, yeah. I have rules.
I think you should, like, I was talking to my mom about this. If someone breaks into your house, I think you should be able to kill them on the spot. Like,
I mean, I live in Georgia, so.
You can. I mean, I just haven't read the code, but I just think that like anytime that someone's like, oh, like especially, oh my God, where people are like, just shoot them in the knee. I'm like,
no, you broke into my domicile. Well, you are a threat to me and my family.
I've never taken a gun class ever where they taught you to do anything other than center mass. It's because center mass is hard to do in and of itself. You know,
you want to leave. You want to leave people a retreat. If you can, leave people a retreat. For your own life and for their life, not just for them, for your own too. That would be the only thing I would add into that situation is don't corner anyone and don't be cornered. If you can get out of there, get out before you kill somebody. That's better.
Yeah,
you know?
What do you think? I got a question from the chat, but I'm going to set it up a little bit. What do you think about voting? Like, do you vote? Do you think it's good?
I have voted before. I voted for Bernie Sanders in 2016. I'm not proud
Gary
of that
Johnson
vote now, but at least I didn't vote for Hillary.
Yeah.
So I understand the arguments about voting being violence, and I philosophically agree with them. I also understand defensive voting. Mm. And if you are given the opportunity to vote to repeal a tax, or you're given the opportunity to vote to repeal a law that causes violence to you and your neighbors, then you should absolutely do that and be involved with it. You know, I hear the argument of trying to change the government from within, but there's a saying that once you drink the Potomac water, you're not, you know, interested in what the reason you went there in the first place.
Yikes. So yeah, maybe on a local level or something like that. Maybe
so
you
I
could.
Think that that's better. Like the local level, like you're saying,
what do you think of the 19th Amendment?
Help me out.
Give women the right to vote.
I mean, if we're going to be doing the voting, your happenstance of genitalia should not determine whether you should vote or not.
Yeah.
I do understand the argument that more emotional voting started taking place when women got the vote.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that there are differences between our sexes. And so, yeah, emotion got injected into the process.
Yeah.
I don't deny that whatsoever.
Yeah. I mean, we talk about a lot on my show, just voting and all kinds of stuff. We talk about everything on my show. But, you know, to me, it's like, you know, do I think, like, you kind of set it up perfectly. If we're going to do this whole voting thing, that your genitalia shouldn't depend on it. Having said that, I think there's men that shouldn't have the right to vote. So it's what I've been saying is, like, if we're going to do this voting thing, you have to be a net contributor to the system. Like, you have to be a tax surplus or a property owner or some type, not a leech. Leeches can't vote, and government workers are leeches. But it's not I think it's funny. It's a funny meme. People are like, repeal the 19th, but it's like, it really should be contributors. That's what I think.
Yeah, it used to be landowners. You know, you owned land, you got a say, and because that's, you were part of the productive capacity of whatever nation you were in.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I mean, I don't.
So far from there. I mean, the status quo is what it is right now, and nothing's getting repealed, yo. Like.
Yeah, they're not going to turn around and tell the women, sorry, no votes for you now. We're not going to take that lying down.
Can you think of any issue that 2/3 of the states could agree on? Like, that's an amendment to the Constitution.
So, you know, when that whole Netflix cuties thing was going on, I don't know of any person of any stripe that wasn't like, what the fuck? So, maybe, like, pedophilia,
yeah.
I think, is, like, the uniting thing where we're all like, no, fuck that. We're not doing it.
What is the definition of that word to you?
So there's like the minor attraction. Mm-hmm. I'm not a sex expert.
Yeah, let's
so
not
I don't
get
know. There's
into
like
the
minor
terms
attraction.
And stuff. Yeah, just like, what's the definition of pedophilia to you from like a non-intellectual level?
Oh, well, I mean, like, clearly we're talking about people who act on it.
That's
you
my
know,
question.
Like, you're crossing the non-aggression principle line when you're, you know, doing that. Yeah. Like, obviously there are people who probably have those types of thoughts but never act on it. I don't think anything negative or bad should happen to those people, and I hope that we'll create an environment in the future where they can get therapy because that's what they need before they do something fucked up. Once you've crossed that line, feet first. So Rothbard said everybody gets one deviant thing. Like, that you don't have to be, like, a perfect ANCAP on.
Mm-hmm.
Mine is the wood chipper. If I get one, that's the one. I don't give a shit. Like.
Yeah. I mean, to me, it's the reason I'm being careful is just because, like, I didn't start, like, running in circles that even talked about this issue until about 2 years ago. I'm 32, but I'm still very, like, innocent and naive a little bit, just in that, like, I'm like, who would do that? And I know people do now. I mean, I knew people did then, but the reason I'm careful about this is because we just went through this with the word Nazi. Both sides have their words, and people are saying punch a Nazi before they've proven even, not even that that person's a Nazi. They haven't even proven that there's a definition for the word Nazi. And I see the same thing with pedophilia on the right now, where they're going to the wood chipper before they even define the word, let alone the person acting out that word. So I just think that every side has a responsibility that if you're going to kill someone or advocate for them being killed, you have to know the definition of every word you're using. Every single word when you're making that argument. So I agree with you.
So, I acknowledge that my response to that is completely emotional based.
No, I don't agree with you, Jessica. I don't think that was very emotional. I think that was actually very flawed. I see the emotional response coming from a lot of the dudes on the right.
Yeah.
Just death to all pedos.
Because the way that men respond in the protection of their families is different, maybe, than the way that women respond
in
the protection of their families.
For good reason, yeah.
Yeah. No, for evolutionary reasons. We're different for evolutionary reasons. It works, people. That's another topic. But I see that too.
Well, if you prove it, then I'm on board. But it's like,
that's what I'm saying.
I'm
so
not
my,
about the
my
mob,
whole thing is
the
this,
lynch
like,
mob is not
caught
good.
This guy red-handed.
Yeah.
I mean,
oh, yeah,
are...
yeah. That to me is it's almost to me it's what the mob will do with it that's worthy of debating. Not like once you got the person dead to rights. Like, yeah, you know, I'm, yeah, but I just see that as like the a big thing about like the libertarian right. I mean, if you go on Twitter for 5 seconds, you can't follow Liberty Twitter and scroll for 5 minutes without seeing the word chipper. And
no, and I think part of that is because libertarians get accused of condoning pedophilia, because there were those debates that went on for a while where people were like, well, if the child consents, you know, and like, so people are kind of like, we have to maybe like overcorrect to get away from this perception. And that's where I think some of that comes from.
That's a good point. Yeah. I mean, we could get into all kinds of stuff where it's like, you know, because there are arguments about like I get what the libertarians are saying about the age of consent thing, because all like, you know, I've talked about it on my show for a couple of weeks where it's like, all of a sudden you set up a system where an 18-year-old goes to jail for sleeping with a 17-year-old, but an 18-year-old gets to have sex with an 85-year-old. And that's not illegal. Like, what the fuck? Like, so it is a little weird. I get the argument. But I just, you know, to me, coming from the left, I just went through this with Nazi. I went through this with Nazi 4 years ago, lost all my friends because I defended Nazis. And I would do it again. I would do it again with any term that doesn't have a definition. You know, it's really, really easy.
Yeah, that's not a popular way to think these days, unfortunately. Nobody wants to hear about nuance.
Yeah. I mean,
you want to make apples to oranges comparisons and.
Yeah. Let's talk about fun stuff. I'm looking over your site right here. You got a bunch of stuff about food, and you got a bunch of stuff about like horror. Tell me what this 100 days of horror, 100 nights of horror challenge. What is it?
100 nights of horror.
Oh, horror.
So okay. I run the largest horror movie challenge on the internet.
What?
We watch 100 horror movies starting July 23rd every year. That's the 100th day before Halloween night, and we watch a horror movie every night, and that's the challenge. It doesn't seem, when you first hear it, you're like, I could do that. I could watch one movie every night. It's a lot harder than you think. I founded the challenge. I've only gotten 57. It's definitely like a challenge to do. But mainly it's about having fun.
Mm-hmm.
The group that does it, we just really like horror movies, and we have a lot of fun doing it. And it's not about like trying necessarily to win the challenge. I create the list so that you have something to work off of, but it's just something that's not political, not, hey, the whole world is burning down. It's just like a fun tivity.
That's so smart. You need that. So you're big on like disengaging from the political thing too. Cool.
Our group, we talk about mind-bendingly graphic gore in our group. But if you mention politics, I will boot your ass quicker than anything, even if I agree with you.
That's like, awesome.
Get the fuck out of here. You know, we're about 35 movies in. Anybody can jump in at any time, either join the Twitter or the Facebook group, and the list is on there for you.
You
can
do
double
right
headers.
Now.
You can catch up. Just, you know, have fun and participate with the group. And you know, we watch a lot of Cronenberg and a lot of Lovecraft, and yeah, it's just it's an art form that doesn't get recognition because a lot of it is goofy.
Yeah, cool.
So I will admit that a lot of the films that we watch are goof-tastic, but I mean, the group's favorite movie, for example, is Army of Darkness.
Yeah, okay. I've never seen
that
movie.
It's silly. Yeah. It's really silly, but it's just good, clean fun, you know?
A couple questions from the chat. What's your favorite horror movie?
I really like Event Horizon because I'm such a big sci-fi nerd. Mm. So that combines my two loves of horror and sci-fi.
Okay, so sci-fi can be... Is Alien a horror movie to you?
Yes. So okay. I actually consider it a horror movie, and I put all three Alien movies on my list this year.
Okay.
Because I had never seen the second and the third one. And then the first one I hadn't seen since I was like a kid. So it's kind of a interesting rewatch.
Yeah.
And I didn't know for the alien popping chest scene, the director didn't tell any of the cast that that was about to happen.
Whoa.
So in that scene, their reactions are legitimate.
Really?
They are just witnessing this guy's chest explode for real.
Wow. I love stuff like that. Like inside info. Is that from a book or like a documentary? How do you know it?
You know, a lot of my friends are either amateur filmmakers or we're just like really into film, period. Cinema is just something that like not only in horror, but cinema in general is something that I study. So that's something that gets talked about among amongst cinema nerds.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of like a well-known factoid amongst cinema nerds. Okay. But yeah, unless you're a cinema nerd, you might not know it.
Okay, so yeah, there's all this stuff with like music and like, you know, stuff like Easter eggs they put into records and stuff like that. Cool.
Right.
I just showed the people like kind of the schedule, like the August and September schedule. Pretty cool. So check that stuff out. Let's. What about food? I looked at your blog and you have a bunch of what did it say at the top? Liberty, property, and the pursuit of snacks.
That's
nice. So what's your blog about?
History. Yeah. History is told a lot of times through the lens of the elites and through wars. And the true history, the history of common people, only gets passed down through food.
Mm.
And so a lot of the things, the ways that we eat and things that seem like very common tradition to us, we don't sort of know why we're doing them. But there are political reasons why spoons are shaped the way that they are. I mean, there's a reason that we eat bacon and eggs for breakfast. All of that stuff has a history. And so I sort of like to study the history of common things because it's not about who was killing each other and who was trying to grapple for power. It's the history of people like you and I.
Cool.
And that has always fascinated me. And I feel like my friends are tired of me talking about it. So I put it in a blog.
Yeah. Do you know what the spoon thing is, or are you just using it? Okay. Yeah. Tell me about it. Yeah.
So England in the mid 1600s decided to kill their king. Charles I. They were going to have a great reformation, Oliver Cromwell and all that business.
Okay.
And they had a parliamentary government, or the first form of parliamentary government in England, for about 12 years after they did that. Charles II, in the meantime, the son of the king, went to France and he lived there in exile. Well, when the Great Reformation didn't work out and the people wanted to have the king again, they brought Charles II back from France. Well, he had been there for 12 years and he had picked up a lot of French ways. And one of the things that he did is he brought with him all this French silverware. So the spoon, which has the classic oval shape that we know where it tapers at the top, is the French style of spoon. And the round soup spoon is the English style of spoon. So English people of society wanted to say, hey, we're with the king. We're with Charles II.
Wow.
So they carved all their spoons to look like Charles's spoons. And to this day, if you go and open up your silverware drawer and pull a spoon out, you will see that oval taper. And that is to say, you are with the king. You are with Charles II.
Wow.
Yeah.
That is amazing.
Yeah.
And so you have a bunch of, like, that's what you write about, stuff like that.
I haven't done a blog about that in particular, but I might do, because I've been telling the spoon story a lot lately, and people are like, get the fuck out of town.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
What was the other one you said?
So bacon and eggs.
Yeah, yeah.
We eat bacon and eggs because of the Catholic Church. And nobody kind of realizes this. It's just something we do, this ritual that we have, this part of our culture, where we're like, bacon and eggs for breakfast. Duh. Well, there's a reason for that, and it's because in the Catholic calendar of the medieval period, you had fasting days, which are about a third of the year. And on fasting days, you couldn't eat meat. And what was considered meat then was red meat, carne, made from carnal, you know, desire was meat. But things like fish you could eat on fasting days. But anyway, so bacon and eggs, which... the modern common person, most of the time, the meat that they had were these thin strips of bacon rashers. And so the morning after a fast, you could have bacon again. So it became tradition pretty much like the breakfast world over, that bacon became associated with a morning meal. Because after a fast, you could have bacon again. And so your bacon and your eggs became associated with a morning meal.
My goodness.
Because of the church. Yeah.
Wow. I don't know if you said it, but what do you know, what year, around what era was this?
That was during medieval times.
Medieval
and that
times.
Was the state of things for damn near 1,000 years.
Wow.
That people only ate meat every other day. About a third of the days of the year were fasting days. And so you'll hear in movies sometimes, you'll hear St. Christopher's Day or St. This Person's Day. The medieval calendar was broken up by sort of religious tradition. And so a lot of the reasons we eat food the way that we do has to do with the church or traditions from Europe that kind of floated over here.
Amazing. I love stories like that. I was listening to a podcast about Attila the Hun, and I think a big part of his downfall was one woman in Rome that sent him like a fake letter. She sent a letter to him wanting to have like an arranged marriage that she like bypassed. She was a princess and she bypassed the government, and the Roman government shit a brick. And it was this, I'm not going
to
butcher it, but
women were basically cattle to the Romans. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So that would have been a big deal.
We got to get back to that way of thinking. All right.
That's why people are like Catholic monarchy. And I'm like, nah,
dude,
bruh.
People, they make good arguments though. They make good arguments. I mean, cause it's like, I do want crosses everywhere. I want a Christian society, and I think it's not very Christian to not want that, to be honest. I don't mean to use the sword and like kill people and stuff, but I think that like it's clearly in Christianity that you want it to be Christian, that you want people.
Yeah, this is definitely, we could have a conversation for hours about this, because I think that a lot of the ways that men and women are different are good for the production of more human beings.
Mm-hmm.
And that we are that way evolutionarily. Like we survived through nature because of these differences and these role divisions.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, I don't feel that women should be forced back into the kitchen or lose their right to vote,
mm-hmm.
or not be able to follow her gifts to find a career that, you know, fulfills her destiny.
Yeah.
So there are parts of like feminism that are good. It's just that like it's become misandry to a large degree. And so we need to, it's like, I don't know if you've ever driven on a road in Michigan when it's icy.
Yeah, I'm from
and
Michigan.
You start to lose control and you overcorrect.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
There's a lot of overcorrection that's gone on in our society that I think we need to like dial it back in.
Yeah. Wow.
So not all the way back over.
It's hard. You're about to hit the deer and you, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Well, I mean, I think that's a really good place to wrap it up just in an hour. You know, why don't you tell people where to find you? All that stuff is linked below in the show description. But Jessica Green, host of The Jessica Green Show, why don't you plug your work and we'll get out of here.
Yeah, I'm on YouTube, The Jessica Green Show. You'll also find me if you type in Libertarian Kitchen Witch. The best place to contact me is Twitter. I'm Libertarian Kitchen Witch on Twitter. Again, if you just type that into search, you'll find me there too. If you want to join the 100 Nights Challenge, we have a at 100 Horror Nights, or there's a Facebook group for 100 Nights Oh Horror. Imagine that it's Irish, Oh Horror. I'm green, I'm Irish, you know, what are you gonna do? Also, I think that's it. Oh, my blog. So if you like food history, which is mainly what I focus on, recipes and food history and stuff, my blog is The Libertarian Kitchen Witch on WordPress. And that's where you find stuff like that. I talk about the Victorian era and Middle Ages a lot.
Cool. All right. Yeah. Check it out, everybody. This will be uploaded as a podcast a couple days from now, 3 or 4 days. But that was Jessica Green.